Is this on? Good afternoon. I hope you've all enjoyed your lunch. I'm Cami Yu, a journalist governor here at the FCC, and on behalf of the FCC and the Board of Governors, I welcome you to today's club lunch. A little bit of housekeeping, please ensure that your mobile phones are turned to silent. I just want to also remind you that in the upcoming week, we have some other club lunches that you may be very interested in. On the 20th, which is next Monday, we have the future of news is traditional media losing out online. Please come to that if you're interested. On Thursday, January 23rd, we're having Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Tao, Ancient Chinese Thought in Modern American Life. So if you and your guests are interested, please sign up with our office. Our special guest speaker today is Betty Yao, who will take us through the lens of John Thompson and his Asian journey when he photographed in Hong Kong and China from the period of 1862 to 1872. When I first talked to Betty and asked her how she became involved with the John Thompson exhibition, she told me how she really accidentally stumbled upon a treasure trove of a priceless collection of glass negatives produced by John Thompson at the Wellcome Library in London. Since then, she has worked to ensure that these images are seen by a wide audience, and especially by those in China and in Hong Kong. And she has taken quite the journey herself with this exhibition and have found scarce funding and have scaled monumental challenges to tour the exhibition around the world. She is a passionate and a determined advocate of arts and culture, and it is with great pleasure that I welcome Betty Yao.
Thank you so much, Cami, and I'm just so delighted and honored to be here and to share this lunch with you. Who was John Thompson, and why is it interesting for you to come to hear about his life? Here's a picture of him. On the left, it's quite rare. There are not many self-portraits of Thompson. So he's born in 1837 in Edinburgh from a family of modest means. At the age of 14, he was sent to train as a lens maker. But in the evening, he made the effort to also have some night classes in art and history of art. So that combination saw him in good stead through the rest of his life. Then in between 1862 and 1872, Thompson was in Asia. Initially in Singapore, where he established a photographic studio, and then in 1868, his studio here in Hong Kong. However, people always ask, well, he came to Asia as a professional photographer only a couple of decades after the invention of photography. So that's quite unusual. But I just wanted to say that Edinburgh at that time was quite the hub of new technology, scientific, photography. So it is not so unusual for a young, impressionable man to have learned about photography and felt, oh, this is something, new technology, I can make a living doing this. Now, from this you see the three crates, and then you see the size of the glass negative. So keep this in mind when I show you other Thompson images, that besides the studio work, whenever he took images outside of the studio, he had to carry around with him these glass negatives. They're 8x10, so they're very heavy, sitting in these crates, and it took four men to lift each crate. Of course, he had to then have the chemicals with him, and some poisonous chemicals, that he had to prepare the glass, and then after the exposure, taking the photography could be maybe between 5 to 30 seconds. So that's a very long time in an era where it's a split second you can take a photo. So then he had to immediately fix it. So he had to travel with him these mobile tent, so dark room. So keep this in mind when you see the other images. So this is King Mongkut of Thailand, Rama IV. How did this young man, at that time he was about 30, get an introduction to the King of Siam? So again, his ability to network and to meet people as a photographer, as almost, that's why we consider him the precursor to photojournalism. Although that concept obviously didn't occur to him at that time, it's looking back at his work that he's a person who was really rarely able to document people, landscape, ways of life. So as a young man, when he was in Singapore, he met the British Council there, and somehow he got an introduction to see King Mongkut, who's actually very interested, as you know, from the King and I story. So he doesn't look a thing like Yul Brynner. But the fact that he was interested in Western people, Western technology, meant that Thompson got this very rare opportunity to meet the king himself. And then you'll see, he then spent about several months in Bangkok. He photographed the royal family. This is a young prince. This is a wonderful portrait of a young man, a young boy, an aristocratic boy. And then lovely images of Chao Phraya, so views, panoramic views. Now, when he was in Bangkok, he then heard this Frenchman found this amazing complex of temples. Now we see this as Angkor Wat. And he was really, really determined to get there. So to travel from Bangkok to Siem Reap, well, in those days, just still jungle territory, took some doing. So again, it showed another dimension of John Thompson, that he's just very, very determined. The curiosity and the determination, I think, marks out good journalists, as in this context, many of you may be journalists. So he brought these crates and went through the jungles. He came down with a kind of fever. We don't know whether it's kind of malaria fever. So anyway, it took him months to get there. But he eventually got there. If you look at this, these amazing photos, these are the first photos of Angkor Wat. Then he took some time. So after this, he went back to the UK. He went back, went to London, Edinburgh, gave a lot of talks. He published his first book. And then he met his wife and asked for her hand. And together, in 1868, he arrived to Hong Kong. Already a thriving colony, he set up his photographic studio somewhere along Queen's Road. It's called the Commercial Building. We're sort of trying to research exactly which building, but somewhere there. But the interesting thing about this photograph, you see, is this is Devoe Road, where the tram line runs today. And this is the waterfront. And I think this is an amazing photo showing. You can see the cathedral church in the background, but all these beautiful buildings are now lost by the waterfront. This is lovely. This is Pedder Street. You're standing exactly where on the left is Landmark, and on the right is Abercrombie and Fitch. So that clock tower is no longer there, so you see Lan Kwai Fong. But funny thing, look at this sedan, the taxi driver. So nowadays, on the left-hand side, that's where we still queue for our taxi. So you have a very immediate and wonderful image of Hong Kong from nearly 150 years ago. Now, this is Lyndhurst Terrace, and I put this there because it's very decorated. Why? This is to receive the then Duke of Edinburgh, who is the second son of Queen Victoria, on his first visit to the colony. Now, this is 1869, 1 year after Thompson arrived, established studio. He already got the commission to take photographs for the commemorative book. So he's doing well, and he surely knows how to network. So in the studio, obviously, a lot of important businessmen, people, they passed through, and he made a good living out of his studios. Now, many studio photographers would have just been happy just to do that, kept the money after a few years, went back and had a good life. But no, there's something about Asia, the people of Asia, that really intrigued John Thompson. So in 1870, by then, he had earned enough money, savings. He was able to sell his studio at a handsome price. By then, he had his first child, and so he sent his wife back to London. That's quite common for young babies to be sent back home in the 19th century. And he spent then the next 2 years using up all his savings to travel up and down the country. So if you look at, this is Nankow Pass outside Beijing. So if you look at this image and the next image, you look at the vantage point, how he framed the photograph and where he would have had to climb to get to take these photographs. And you think of the equipment he had to carry and the darkroom and all that. And you'd marvel at some of the beautiful landscapes that emerged from this work. However, photographing the great and the good, that's his job. So this is a wonderful image of Prince Kung. Some of you may have seen this in books. It's featured in many history books. But he also took a series of wonderful photographs of the street life. So a few decades before, the paintings of George Chinnery, you'll see now being photographed. So if you look at this, the fruit seller. However, why did I become interested in Thompson and, as Kemi said, gave up my job and taking this around this exhibition around the world? This is very unusual for people to allow photography at home. This is a courtyard setting with three women. The Manchu women, and the one on the right is the Han woman with the bound feet. I marvel at his ability and the work that he's produced photographing women, and I find this really exceptional and really worth taking it to the public as well. So you see, look at this image. This is 150 years ago. A profile. Now this woman obviously didn't pay for her photograph to be taken. She's a poor woman from Canton. But he photographed the rich and the famous and the people common in the street with equal care, respect, and dignity. And that also, for me, sets him apart from some of the other Victorian photographers I've seen at the time, who were mainly looking at Asians as specimen, maybe with the heads chopped off, or... I thought Thompson just, he looked around and he recorded what he saw. This could almost appear in vogue today, a Cantonese woman in her home. Children, he photographed a number of the wonderful photographs in the exhibition in the Maritime Museum of children, this little girl. But look at this little boy and look at his eyes and the face. And you imagine, you count The exposure time could be 10, 15 seconds. Even today, it's hard to photograph children, but in those days, for him to capture the kind of alertness and the eagerness to learn of this charming boy, it's quite wonderful. And people always ask, which my favorite photo? Obviously, I love them all. That's why I'm doing this. But let me show you these two images. The one on the left, young, she must be just a teenager, Manchu girl in her bridal finery, wonderful silk and jewelry. And this is the photo she's about to be married. But if you look at her eyes, sort of tinged with, I don't know whether you could say sadness, but anticipation maybe, melancholy maybe. Because her married life will be restricted, will be claustrophobic, confined to that courtyard setting. And if she had a nasty mother-in-law, that'd be the end of her life. On the right, this is a Tanka woman. Again, I'm sure you've seen images of Tanka women. Simple cotton top, poor, living in these boats like in the old days in Aberdeen. But look at her eyes. She's her own person. She's free. And it expresses that joie de vivre that you could sort of almost sense that in this image. And for a man 150 years ago using this technology, this early photograph, for someone to be able to capture two women from different parts of China and through their eyes and have the sensitivity to get to maybe their inner lives. And I feel Thompson is a really exceptional photographer and he should be better known by wider public. So let me spend the next few minutes just telling you this story, how we ended up in Hong Kong today. So I was born here, and I was brought up in Hong Kong until the age of 14. Then I went abroad to study, like many young people. Because I had work, I stayed abroad. And several years ago, I worked as a director at Asia House, a charity quite similar to Asia Society. And I used to get invitations all the time to see different collections. And one day, I went to the Wellcome Library. And I don't know, maybe many of you recognize Wellcome, the Wellcome Trust, as one of the richest foundations, and probably next to Gates, donating to medical and scientific research. But very few people will know they have an amazing collection of cultural artifacts. So I was invited to maybe look at bookbinding, but I was shown by the curator this wonderful collection of images because I was Chinese, and he said, then I didn't think I would do anything about it. I mentioned to my husband, Paul, who's sitting here today. 6 months later, we met the curator again, and just as one does, making small talk, Paul says, well, have these been seen by Chinese? And he said, the curator said, no, we would love to show it, but we're a medical foundation, so we don't really know how. And because my parents, my father's here today, had a courtyard home in Beijing, we used to go back for holidays. So I very naively volunteered to show them in Beijing. So I took 6 months leave from Asia House, said, oh, I'll do Beijing, I'll come back. Well, the opening in Beijing was sensational because Chinese people just did not see real photographs, even if there were around that time amateur and later on some professional Chinese photographers, but they would have been destroyed, certainly during the Cultural Revolution or through passing of time. So from Beijing, we went to Fujian, Guangzhou, and to cut a long story short, Hong Kong is the 13th city. We were shown in. We were in Sweden, in Dallas, all sorts of places. and onward we're booked to 2015. But I'm always looking for new museums and other cities. So if any of you can think of any, do come and I'd be very grateful. So I was shown these and I volunteered to do this. So how did this collection came to be, the quality of these prints are so good? Because you see, glass negatives are very, very hard to store. Because the glass, if it's very cold, it goes brittle. But the emulsion side, they gunge up a bit if it's too warm. Now, Thompson brought these three crates back to London in 1872. He continued to talk, give lectures. He had an illustrious career, which is not subject of this talk today. He photographed Queen Victoria, and he had a great career. But in 1920, as an old man, on a walking stick, he stumbled along to Wigmore Street, behind Oxford Street, where he saw an exhibition of Sir Henry Wellcome's collection, who Wellcome loved photograph and collected widely, but he found there was nothing on China. So Thompson was smart enough to say, well, I'm so old now, I've got these crates. So he wrote to Wellcome to say, I would like to sell them to you. So he wasn't about to donate anything. So, okay, let's sell. I have notes and everything. We don't know exactly what happened. The price was not agreed. And in 1921, Thompson dies of a heart attack. Luckily, then his children found these letters, the exchange, and quickly sold it to Wellcome. If it wasn't for that, and that Wellcome had the money, certainly the conditions in the library to keep them in such good conditions. However, that collection grew to over a million items. And in the 1970s, the current curator first started, and he found a note. Someone said on the crates, they're broken glass. You know, take a look and throw them away. They're not interesting. So he took some contact prints, and he said, oh, they're very beautiful, let's keep them. Of course, in the 70s, nobody really cared about old photographs of China. You know, and these things are just sitting around. So he left them there, thank goodness, until he showed them to me. And then I took the initiative to tour them around the world. And because of this, you will be able to see, until 16th of February, the Maritime Museum, stunning images over a meter tall. There's not a little historical down memory lane exhibition. We present these images as they look today. The whole glass negative is digitized and printed out. And we think of this as a contemporary work of art so that young people can come and also draw inspiration from them as well. So I hope this in a short session to give you just a picture of who he was and how this show came to be, and that 150 years later, Thompson comes full circle, comes back to Hong Kong, and as a Hong Kong person, I've come full circle and brought these back to the Hong Kong public. So thank you very much.
All right, we have some time for questions, and if anyone wants questions or have questions, just please raise your hand and we'll get the mic to you. Just hang on, we'll get you a mic over here. Would you please give us your name before your question? Thank you.
I'm not sure this is working or not. It is? Okay. Edith Terry. The note on the boxes said that some of the plates were cracked and broken, so throw them out. But what condition were they in when you found them? And how many, what's the total number of good
about
plates?
About 600 glass plates, but including there were a few from Vietnam as well. And
some are in very poor condition. You'll see some of them we almost hesitated exhibiting them. But artistically, I think they had good merit. So when you see the show, you'll see some very, very clear ones. And others, because of maybe the composition, the subject that we felt, although the quality is less good, we should show them. But what's curious is that some of them, you'll see there's a cloth behind the image, the person. And that's because during John Thompson's time, he would only print that front bit. But we decided to digitize the whole thing, including he wrote, sort of scrawled some things, the emulsion side. So you see the handwriting is wrong way around. And some bits of sticky paper. We wanted to show everything. I wanted to show the public what I saw a few years ago. And because of 21st century technology, we're able to show them this full glory. Rather than if you looked at a vintage John Thompson today, it would be a smaller. Of course, they're very, very valuable now. That's something maybe to mention that 2 years ago, a Thompson book, a folio, which meant that there are about 70 vintage photographs in the book, auctioned at Sotheby's for £350,000. So that's how highly collectible they are today. If you think in the 70s they were almost thrown out, now people can't get enough of the Thompson photographs.
Betty, I do have a question. I found it quite interesting of all the places you could have had the John Thompson prints exhibited, you chose the Maritime Museum. How did that come to be?
It's such a wonderful setting, the Maritime Museum. I must say, in all of Hong Kong, I don't know if you've been to that temporary exhibition space, as you enter the right-hand side, one side is all down floor-length windows looking at the harbor. And you can almost see Thompson sailing in to the Hong Kong Harbour in 1868, and I think it's just such a wonderful setting. Because I don't know whether many of you know Anthony Hardy. When I did the George Chinnery exhibition in London, he lent some of his pieces, and that's how we met, and through serendipity, a bit of chat. And this is way before the museum opened. But can we mention about September? Not yet. Okay. All right. Watch this space then. We won't say anything.
Do we have any other questions?
Hi, Aaron Nigam. I was just wondering, is this being also exhibited in London, and if so, where?
Not yet London, because it's interesting because I had no planned thought in the beginning to tour it. It was only going to be Beijing, because through my parents we have friends and we did that. And I was going back to work at Asia House, and I've not gone back. Of course, I still consult and do other exhibitions for them. But it's interesting, London is a place I haven't found the right venue, and until we find the right place, because it's now booked to 2015, to the end of 2015, and there are other museums I'm talking to in Australia and other places that is less of a pressure. But I would love to show it in London.
But if it's been digitalized, how I pronounce it, you can make more than one copy now, can't you, of the photos?
Yes, we can. But because they are... Also, the easy way is just to put it on a disc and give it to the museum to print out. But I think of these as art. So they're done very, very carefully. They're digitized from the original glass and then put into storage, and because they're so valuable, as I mentioned before. And they're printed at 1,000 DPI. So, and some of the images are so huge, I am reluctant to make multiple copies of them. So I'm touring this China exhibition, so it's Hong Kong and various parts of China. And I am working on a second. I've just come back from Bangkok. And we had a very successful trip despite everybody saying don't go, but we had a great time. And we are talking to a museum there, possibly to show the first few images. They're not included in this show. And I'm going to curate a Siam Angkor show and touring that separately.
Philip Wickery. What was his relationship with some of the early Chinese photographers, like Afong and Hong Kong and others?
He wrote in his notes, he mentions Afong. He's very friendly with all of them. In fact, he admired some of their work. Also, he gave them tips and he helped them. So there was a lot of exchange. It's a small community of photographers working in Hong Kong. But also in Beijing, it's interesting how he got the photos of the courtyard and the women. It's because this is the home of Mr. Yang, who's who's from Beijing, but educated in Shanghai and discovered photography and became an amateur photographer. And actually Thompson taught him. And in exchange, he was able to photograph his back courtyard.
Hi, Betty. I'm Tara Joseph with Reuters, and thanks for sharing these splendid images. You mentioned a bit about John Thompson, but I wonder if along with these photos, he wrote much about his subjects or wrote about Hong Kong at the time, and whether you know what sort of social circles he moved in and whether he made any comments about society in Hong Kong during his era.
I must say he wrote, he had notes and published many books. If you read them today, you might cringe at some of the comments because you have to remember he's a Victorian person, but he did record all the places and all the people and comments. Some of the places were a bit other. When we created the exhibition, we couldn't fully use his notes because we felt some of the time frame was wrong and the places were wrong. So all the exhibits are newly researched. I worked with two scholars, one in Beijing and one in London, to create new notes for these, which you'll find actually in the book. I have limited a number of books that I brought back from the printers and some postcards of a set of postcards of Hong Kong. And I think you can't follow absolutely everything that he said in his books, because looking back, we found that some of the time and some of the places, they were the wrong places. So it's quite an interesting journey for us as well, not myself and my team, working on this show. So we base some of the things on John Thompson's own writings, but others on fresh research.
Any other questions? Betty does have some books and some postcards at the side table. Please, if you would like to buy one, they're available over there, and I'm sure Betty would be happy to maybe sign and autograph that. On behalf of the FCC, we have a small little gift for you. This concludes our talk today, but of course, Betty is here for a few more minutes, and if you'd like to talk to her, please come up. Thank you.